It's the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at neverwinternightspodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hey, this is Aaron, a.k.a. DM Silver Adept of the Realms of Trinity and the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
And this is Cilantro. I am a Neverwinter Foundry author.
And this is Brian, a.k.a. Sir Brian of the Realms of Trinity and Neverwinter Nights podcast. And you're listening to the 184th episode of the Neverwinter Nights podcast, a podcast all about the Neverwinter Nights series of role-playing games and now the released MMO from Cryptic, Neverwinter. Well, tonight's guest is yet another classic and award-winning Foundry author. We have Cilantro here with us. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much.
So please start off by telling us a bit about yourself and how you got into Neverwinter Foundry development.
Well, I'll give you the long story.
That's awesome. Give it up.
I actually started playing computer games quite a long time ago, about 20 some odd years ago. I'm an old man, needless to say. And one of the first games that I got involved with was Neverwinter Nights on AOL. And paid through the nose for the privilege of of spending hours upon hours of adventuring and playing with several of my friends. And so needless to say, when Neverwinter Online was announced and Cryptic was taking off with it, I decided that, well, I had to be a part of that. And in my first beta weekend for Neverwinter Nights, I actually met up with some old friends of mine from those days in AOL, of all things. You know, it's hard to believe. But it turns out that one of them was actually recruiting people to be part of the Neverwinter Online Foundry beta. And so I put my name in the hat, and a week later, I got an email saying, welcome. And I was right in there with the very first set of Neverwinter Foundry beta folks in what they call their Silver Stars program, and just started off and running and started creating stuff and seeing what I could build and announcing the plethora of bugs I came across at the time, and you know, just worked around what I had to work around in order to tell the story I wanted to tell. And it was a lot of fun, and many sleepless nights later, well, here I am.
Yeah, you know, it's a common theme from our experiences with Neverwinter Nights 2 development and, you know, talking to the other Foundry developers that, you know, when you start getting into a new tool set or, you know, something like that, it's funny how, like, you lose a lot of sleep.
Yeah, it's kind of nature of the beast. You can't get around that. I think that probably the thing that impressed me most, because I had played both Neverwinter Nights and Neverwinter Nights 2, and while I never got into the degree of modding that I could have, it was one of those things that sparked my interest, but those tool sets were very complex. What was amazing, what I found amazing anyway, about the Neverwinter Online Foundry was, you know, how simple it was to kind of step in and create something, you know, maybe not perfect, but, you know, something that was of a certain degree of quality in a few hours. And that was very feasible and very possible, you know, and it, you know, yeah, it was just a plain simple dungeon crawl, you know, with, you know, a few beasts here and there and, mm-hmm. and a little dialogue.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, when you think about it, to be able to do that, you know, with, you know, a 2-hour investment of time or even a 4-hour investment of time, if you've worked with any modding sets at all, is pretty miraculous. I really enjoy that aspect of it more than anything else.
Yeah, I definitely can see that. I mean, just from what you said, you even like 2 to 4 hours. I mean, compare that to taking you 2 to 4 days just to get understanding of the basics. To do anything.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, so there's obviously a huge difference in the curve with ramping in.
Yeah, definitely. I just left because, you know, you guys are talking 2 to 4 hours, 2 to 4 days. And I remember, Brian, we tried doing tutorials with our new DMs for stuff. And after 2 to 3 months, we kind of scrapped that idea.
Right. Well, and I don't want to make it sound like, you know, it's you know, something that you can just walk into. I mean, yeah, I was able to create something, you know, fairly decent on a time frame. But, you know, and then the other side of that coin was as I worked with the tool and became more and more proficient and really got into some of the more complex features and capabilities of the tool, I started realizing, wow, you know, there's actually a very powerful engine behind, you know, some very simple functionality. And if you make the time investment to actually learn not only, you know, what the tool is capable of, but how you can, you know, do certain things with it, that, you know, I'm sure the designers of the tool had no idea that authors would turn around and use the tool in some of the ways that that we have. It's actually pretty impressive, you know, some of the things that we saw even coming out of beta, you know, where we were working with the devs fairly closely. That was another really nice experience, was that the devs were actually in there and we would communicate with them and we'd, you know, tell them, okay, this is a problem, or we'd like to see this, or, you know, it'd be really nice if this feature or function was available. And a couple days later, or maybe a week later, we'd start to see some of those things coming down the pipe. And actually, you know, so there was a collaborative process there, which, you know, to be honest with you, I'd never experienced with a game company before. So I really feel like Cryptic held up their end in terms of, you know, they trying at least to interact with the community and building something that we'd be able to use very effectively.
Oh, definitely. Something I noticed as well. Talk a little bit about more about the stuff that you've done. Can you tell the audience about the Quest that you've developed and like just a little bit of background behind them?
Sure. Well, the first thing that I developed, like I said, it was just a real simple dungeon delve. It was a quest called Rats in a Maze, and it was about were-rats, and these rat catchers were going down into the sewers of Neverwinter, and they discovered all their traps destroyed, and it turns out the reason why was because they were all were-rats, and so you had to basically clear out the were-rats for them. Very simple dungeon crawl type of experience, just really playing around with the dynamics of what was available, with some follow commands and some patrols and, you know, different encounter groups and some costuming and those types of things. Then from there, almost within a week or two of getting involved in the Foundry, we actually had the first spotlight challenge, which was actually in beta. It was for beta weekend two. And it was to create a quest that was based in the Black Lake District. And I had played through most of the content by then in alpha and beta. And one thing that's that Cryptic has done a very good job of is including a lot of the very rich history that's available as part of the Neverwinter world. And they were able to integrate all of these elements like the Grey Cloaks and the Gnashers and, you know, having Neverwinter and Never Ember, you know, kind of there with his mercenaries controlling things in some sections of the city. But in other sections of the city, you have orcs and other groups that are, you know, basically taking charge. But the one thing I noticed was that, you know, out of necessity, you know, Cryptic couldn't do a deep delve into the lore of, you know, well, who are the Grey Cloaks and where did they come from? And, you know, who are the Gnashers and are they really that bad? Or, you know, I mean, what is, you know, how did these groups kind of get established within the city and why are they in the areas that they're in? And so the first quest being in the Black Lake District, the first quest that I really started developing was actually a quest based for that contest in the Black Lake District. And I developed it entirely as a story-based quest, very lore-heavy. And it was to do a deep delve into, you know, who are the Nashers, who are the Great Cloaks, and establish sort of a set of characters that I would like to see, you know, further expand down the line and build up a campaign for. And so my first quest, Beast Within, did actually get featured in Alpha. That was my first featured quest. And it was actually quite a pretty exciting time for me because this was all brand new for me, and to get featured in Alpha, even though, you know, it was a very limited audience, was very cool. And another feature of that particular quest was it was the first time anyone in the Silver Stars program had built a building from the ground up. Basically, Cryptic has given us all these rooms and things that we could, you know, pretty much just plug and play, and, you know, maps pre-made that we could just build all together. Mm-hmm. But the one thing about most of the Cryptic supplied content was it was all very linear and horizontal. You couldn't like have a three-story building, which is what I wanted for this particular quest. I wanted to have an upstairs. I wanted to have a basement. I wanted to have control. And I didn't want to use the one building that Cryptic had given us that had already been used in about 50 or 60 quests at that point.
Yeah. And, you know, like a Sears mass-produced house.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, eventually you get tired of seeing those same things over and over again. And the challenge as an author is, you know, taking something Cryptic has made and is available to all the authors and then really making it your own. So I figured I'd really make it my own and just, you know, start taking wall bits and floor bits and dwarven columns from here and there and a roof section off of some other house and throw it all together. And I created this big, what I called the chapter house, which was basically where this particular group of Nashers were set up. And it was the pivotal point of the quest, but it really worked out well. And from that point on, you know, building those types of environments completely from the ground up became the way that I build a lot of my content. I try to, you know, leverage what Cryptic has given us, but at the same time, I like to, you know, I spend a great deal of time on all my maps. And I figured that that's probably about 3/4 of my investment into a quest now is building custom environments. And of course, once that quest was finished, I went on to create its the second part of the campaign, which involved dealing with sewer rats and in particular the relationship between the Nashers and the rats and what was going on with the sewers and under Neverwinter. And then that then transitioned over into a whole lore-based quest dealing with the Ashmadai and some of the other elements that were trying to take over this city. And I actually built a city completely from scratch, very similar to what you might see in Protector's Enclave or something like that for that particular quest. So this story and campaign is still growing. The part that I'm working on now actually is going to be a little innovative because the maps are all vertical. And whereas the majority of, you know, content that you see, even in most of the quests out there today, is it's very horizontally based. I'm actually building vertical caverns for the majority of the next piece, which is focused on the relationship with the Plague Changed and that whole that area with the blue cult and some of the spell plague influenced elements of the Neverwinter mythos. And let's see what else. Oh, and then of course there was the latest contest, which was to build a quest in the Tower District. I did go ahead and create a quest for that, even though initially I wasn't going to at all. It actually came about as something of a last minute thrown together quest, based on some ideas that my kids had, and just kind of went off on a tangent called Tower District Travails. And I did, actually win that contest and was spotlighted and featured. And that quest has gotten such a huge response from folks. I to be honest, I don't know where the response came from. It certainly, I do not consider it to be my best work, but, you know, it definitely hit a chord with people and they really enjoyed it. And, you know, sometimes that's the way it goes when you're creative and you create something. You never know what's going to strike that that chord with the public, and they just go, wow, that's fantastic. And you kind of look at it and go, well, it's okay.
So since you nicely segued into it, so you kind of said you created that as a lark, but what was it like to win the Tower District Foundry contest?
Well, it was surprising, for one. I really didn't expect to. Basically, what happened was about a week after the contest started, I was in the middle of creating, actually publishing, the third part of my campaign. And so I kind of chalked it up to, you know, look, I'm going to be busy for the next week. You know, we basically had 2 weeks to build this Tower District quest, and there was no way that I was going to be able to have the time to create anything. And then publishing of the third part of my campaign went through very smoothly, much smoother than publishing normally does, because there's actually a very definitive process I go through. I don't know if all authors do, but, you know, I bug check and have other people play it, and then they give me feedback, and, you know, we're constantly in a state of changes for like the first week that a quest is out, you know, at least in my universe. You know, I go through probably about 15 or 20 publishes. And for that particular quest, I only had to do 3, and it was pretty much bug free at that point. And so it went through very, very well. And I had a week left, you know, about a week and a half, and I'm going, gee, now if I was going to do this Tower District contest, what would be kind of interesting? And I say, well, you know, I always find interesting things in dichotomy, you know. And so I thought, okay, well, we, you know, Tower District, we got orcs that have taken over the Tower District. You know, what can we do there? And I said, well, let's start off by, instead of having all these 7.5-foot orcs, let's make them, you know, 3.5 feet tall. Mm. You know, and that was kind of the how it all started, you know, was, okay, let's start off with that dichotomy. All the orcs have been shrunk, you know, and then, well, let's take it a step further and let's make them all disappear, you know. And so the Tower District is basically, you know, whole groups of orcs have just disappeared out of the Tower District and nobody knows where they've gone. So the idea came about that, you know, you as the player would take on the role of investigating the disappearance of the orcs and figure out what's going on. And then I created the, you know, the idea that, well, a shaman had, you know, shrunk and transported all of the orcs somewhere else. You know, I'm sitting there and I'm talking to my son about this, and he says, wow, that sounds really neat. You know, all you need now is, you know, a scarecrow, a tin man, and a cowardly lion. And, you know, you got a great story. And I kind of turned to him and I laughed at him and I said, you know what? Yeah, maybe. You know, he said, but I can't do a scarecrow, a tin man, and a cowardly lion. So we sat down and kind of as a family, me and my two sons, who are 13 and 14, you know. And,
it's like
and,
a TV show. Me and my two sons.
Exactly. Yeah, cool. You know, we sat down and we said, okay, so what are we going to do, you know, with the scarecrow? And so we created the story behind the scarecrow of how, you know, he's actually a zombie, and he's protecting his family crypt from the Red Wizards, and the Red Wizards are trying to steal the bones so that they can animate them, which is, you know, what Red Wizards do. And so the next part was, okay, so for the Tin Man, that was easy. That you know, some type of golem would work really well there. So he created an iron golem, and there were fire elementals that were actually trying to steal all the golems to actually go down and work in the mines. That is an interesting twist. And then, of course, you know, Cowardly Lion became a werewolf. And so we started playing around with that as an idea. Just kind of bloomed from there, you know, and before I knew it, we had, you know, the Ithlid involved, and of course the character that kind of sent Shaman was telling basically was responsible for the orcs disappearing and everything. It turns out he's actually the Wizard of Paws, you know, and he's, you know, basically was trying to get back for being, you know, abused as a young shaman apprentice. And so that's the reason why he did all of this. And he created this Paws land where everything is only 3.5 feet tall. And he's the big man. He's this great big huge ogre who actually turns out being this little short goblin orcish creature. And that's basically the story, how I ended up with a Wizard of Oz parody when I never meant to go down that road at all.
Which kind of leads me to my next question. What type of feedback do you normally get from the players? Is it what you expected, like about this particular release or some of your other stuff?
Well, it's interesting because I kind of thought, you know, some people would like it, you know, just on the basis of it's, you know, it's a parody and some people dig on that. Some people like it because, you know, while it's a parody of Oz, the story is completely different, although it has some the same moralistic, you know, underpinnings, you know, where everybody kind of discovers that what they're searching for is what they've always had inside of them. And so, you know, it has that last moment where everybody kind of says, yeah, you know, and gives you a little feel good at the end. But I was really shocked at the amount of people that just loved the quest and gave me great feedback. And of course, there were a lot of people that said, yeah, this is stupid. And some people that, you know, just, you know, I actually feel like there's, you know, there might be some segment of the audience that, you know, plays Quest just so that they can say something nasty at the end.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're going to have that, which actually, you know, now that you brought it up, I mean, I know that we've seen this before. I mean, I'm not with Neverwinter, but we've seen it with Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2, is the fact that you have people front that produce content that do nothing but slam down other people's content. You know, just like one of them type of backslash type things. You know what I mean? I that kind of makes me wonder sometimes. You get people come on and it's like, oh, you just want to just get, like you said, get it to the end and just smack down on your content. Kind of hard to say.
Yeah, but the good news is that those people are really obvious.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally.
You know, I mean, I really loved, you know, in one case, I actually got some feedback that they hated the moral to the story, that, you know, that I was completely, obviously not an L. Frank Baum fan at all, and, you know, I had completely destroyed his story, and he's rolling over in his grave, you know, and having that one comment, but then having, you know, the 300 other 5-star reviews that says, wow, this was really terrific. You know, that one comment kind of, you know, went away, and who cares? Now, if I'd gotten 50 people that had said the same thing, then as an author, I'm going to look at it and I'm going to go, oh, well, you know, maybe I need to take a look at that. Maybe that's something that I need to legitimately change. You know, there, like a lot of people about this particular quest said, it's very easy, you know, because really I didn't design it to be a very combat heavy quest. It was a story. It was meant to be something that you could kind of, you know, just enjoy as you went through it. Didn't have to have level 60 gear in order to survive. You know, that wasn't its goal in life, you know, and some people are looking for that content, and, you know, Lord love them. I think that that's, you know, something that I the Foundry does need to provide for those people. But then that's the great thing about the Foundry, is you can have all kinds of different types of content. And as long as you explain what your purpose is in creating something as an author, the expectation can be there. It's like, if you say this is a story quest, it has so much dialogue in it, you're probably going to go to sleep. You know, most people are going to read that and they'll either not play the content because they're afraid of going to sleep, or they'll be one of those people that say, you know, I love story quests, and they'll go in and they'll just read every strip of dialogue, enjoy it immensely, give you the ratings that you deserve, you know, give you good feedback, and subscribe to you so that the next time you create something similar, they can do it again. And that's part of what the strength of the Foundry is, you know, by the same token, you can have these dungeon crawls, you know, and in some ways, I'm one of those authors that people are afraid to subscribe to because I like building all different kinds of content and you can't pigeonhole me into a particular category. So if you subscribe to me, one day you may get a heavy lore quest like my campaign, or you'll get a serious dungeon crawl, or you'll get the last part of the campaign, which I'm working on now, which is going to, you know, be fundamentally a series of puzzles and jumping trials and, you know, some things because it's going to be a vertical maze. So I like having that ability to jump around into different categories and not lock myself into any particular, you know, one type of storytelling.
Out of curiosity, and I know you've already gotten a bit into some of your favorite features, how do some of your favorite features merge into your future plans for projects?
Well, with Fury of the Feywild, they actually released some new items into the Foundry, of course, all of the Feywild items. So pretty much I'd say what's available in the Fury of the Feywild maps, the Foundry authors have, I'd say close to 70, 75, 80% of that content is available to us as authors to move forward. They also added some new things that we'd been asking for a while, volume doorways, so that as you approached a drawbridge, the drawbridge would open or close and those types of things. And they also offered some hidden walls and invisible walls just prior to release of Fury of the Feywild. So a lot of those elements I'm including into my my current quest that has some floating rock bridges and some things like that, so that if you know, go to approach this one area, if you don't jump onto the floating rock bridge in, you know, the right amount of time, then you have to wait for it to float all the way back, and, you know, and so it's one of those things. Or you may actually have to move away from the edge where it starts floating in order to get it to come back to you, and then, you know, run up forward and then jump on it at just the right moment. Those types of things that actually give some extra functionality and give some animation to the environments allow us to create some very powerful things. I mean, when you start thinking about different ways to use it. So I'm taking advantage of a lot of those elements in my latest quest, which of course means it's taking quite a bit longer to, you know, time everything out and make sure everything works, you know, the way I want it to in the design.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Well, and they also added another really neat feature in that not only do you have, we always had the 3D editor. Well, we didn't always have it. We had it as of release. It was something that we talked about heavily in beta that, you know, we really needed the ability to move objects while in 3D space. And it really became kind of a focal point of the beta process, you know, for the authors to say, you know, hey, this is important to us. And the developers really listened to us. You know, that was one of the big things is, you know, it was very obvious that, you know, they'd say, well, what about this? You know, and they'd ask the question and they'd get some feedback, you know. And then right towards coming out open beta, they said, well, here it is, you know, here's 3D editing. And, you know, it was just like, wow. Yeah. It was a whole new ball game, you know. So now, you know, because before you'd have to drop something down in the 2D editor and then go into the map and look at it and see if it was right. And if not, then you'd have to go into the 2D editor and then edit it, you know.
Oh yeah.
And it was, you know, it could take you, you know, 400 hours to create a room, you know, under those terms, because you're constantly switching back from one view to the other.
Right, absolutely.
But with 3D editing, of course, you know, we could drop those items in the 2D editor, you know, pretty much anywhere we wanted to, and then in the 3D editor, move them where we wanted to. So as, you know, a person like me who build up these very complex environments, I would, you know, first go in and I'd drop sort of a palette of items that would, you know, just kind of sit in the space. And then I'd go in and copy and paste them and move them around and do whatever I had to do with them in the space in the 3D editor. And it accelerated my development time, you know, 3-4 times what it was before. But the problem was always I had to drop those items still in the 2D space. And it was horrendous. And also I had to always have this huge chunk of my map set aside to be my palette of objects, you know, and it was always very frustrating to, you know, it's like, okay, I can't build in that space yet because I got all this stuff.
Right, right.
So a couple of things that they added with Fury of the Feywild was, one, in the 3D editor, you have the ability to actually drag and drop items directly out of the detail listing of objects into your map. So when you go into edit mode, you actually have the same detail listing over on the side as you would in the 2D editor. That was huge because now you can go in and you can just select the object that you want, drop it where you want, and then move it around. And I thought that was pretty neat. And then when I went in and they said, well, right click on the item, you know, and now you can actually go in and right click on that item and see all of the same parameters that you were only able to adjust in the 2D editor before as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically huge. You've got full control over what you're capable of doing in 3D space, which is really nice.
Yeah, that definitely is. I mean, that's something that, you know, I'm accustomed to with Neverwinter Nights 2, the tool set. We've always had that capability fully. And to not have it, I'd be like, my head chopped off or something. I don't even know how I would even go about doing it. You know, I tried playing with the Foundry and in the 2D model, like the 2D and 3D, like you were saying, going back and forth, and having that capability, I'd have to agree that I don't know how you made anything 2D to 3D like that without having that full capability.
Very frustrating. It was very frustrating, especially building the first, you know, building out of building blocks. You know, it's like now, it became all about math. Well, all the first floor objects are at 20 feet tall. All the third floor objects are at 40 feet tall. You know, and you're actually having to go in and switch back and forth between 2D and 3D to place objects and then adjust their parameters so that their height is relative to where it should be in relationship to the current environment. That was huge. That was actually one of the biggest tool advances that I've seen, you know. And then they added a fly mode, which actually, you know, it's kind of interesting because what it is basically, you know, I could be wrong, but I think I'm right. I think what they did is they took the feature of flying directly out of Champions Online, which is another cryptic game, and they simply plugged in that code into the Foundry so that you could go into this fly mode. So basically you become invisible. Yeah, you become a little bit faster than what you would be if you were running around, but you can also move in a vertical space. So you can actually go up and down, fly left and right, you know, do whatever you need to adjust objects that are on other than a horizontal plane.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously for what I'm working on right now, that's a huge advancement as well. So they're definitely developing a great tool set, you know, and even if it doesn't fit everybody's expectations of what would be ideal and perfect, they've certainly given us a lot to play with.
When you talk about features, you know, what sort of features would you like to see added moving forward? You know, we talked about the 3D editor and being able to do that stuff. Is there something like that you're finding now in your current development that, you know, if you had, it'd be like best things in sliced bread? Or,
well, there's a lot of very good tools already there in the editor itself. Of course, the biggest thing that, you know, as an author, I'd love to see is more detail objects, more ability to you know, build new things, you know, some basic building blocks, you know, because, you know, what my level of expectations are is basically that anything that exists already as a graphical element within the game should be available to a Foundry author. So if there's a staircase that's being used in a cryptic map somewhere, I should have that staircase available to me to use in my own maps, you know, and so That's a big thing. But in addition, it'd be really nice to have some things that maybe were developed specifically for the Foundry. Things like, you know, blank walls that we could then apply textures to. Mm-hmm. and that type of thing, which gets into really a whole different level of development and maybe is outside of the scope of what the vision for the Foundry is. Because the Foundry right now pretty much exists of elements that already are painted, have their, you know, textures applied, and have all of their vertexes and everything already predetermined. So, you know, it's like you can't build a hill by, you know, adjusting height or do things like that, because basically those are all preformed elements and you're just selecting from a library of preformed elements. So, you know, some of those ability to dynamically change items within the structure of the Foundry would be very nice to have, you know. But I'm realistic in my expectations in seeing that that may not be within the scope of what they're looking at being able to create. They're really not trying to build the Aurora engine, you know. They're not trying to build something that becomes so complex that it becomes unwieldy, because then you get away from that being able to step into it and within a few hours produce something of a certain degree of quality. You know, and I can certainly be behind that, because I think that that's what keeps the Foundry alive and growing, and new authors coming in and developing their own stories. You know, and in fact, there's a thread on the forums right now discussing, you know, well, some Foundry authors have left to move on to other games, you know, and their content is becoming a little stale, you know, and it's like, well, that's not a bad, that's actually very good, because new authors are coming in and they're hungry and they want to create their stories and they want to see them recognized. And those are very positive steps forward, which kind of leads to the second thing that I'd really like to see occur within the structure of the Foundry. It's not necessarily within the editor or the tool set or anything, but it's just so that authors have better resources for getting knowledge of their quests out. You know, Cryptic is, you know, struggling a little right now with, you know, okay, well, how do we create an environment that allows, you know, 300,000 or 400,000 Foundry quests to be searchable and to be able to provide meaningful searches against it so that people can find the types of content that they're looking for. And I think that there are solutions that are out there that, you know, they may or may not be looking at. But I don't think they're there yet on that particular element of the Foundry. And probably the third thing that I would just love to see, and I think really is the only stopping block from being able to create really solid group content in the Foundry, is the ability to place and manipulate to a greater degree than we can with our current encounters, boss mobs, things that require more than a single individual to deal with, and actually some expansion on the Foundry in terms of being able to, you know, create quality group content, even if it is for a group of five, which is the standard Neverwinter group. It would be really, I think, a good move on Cryptic's part to open up that area, because right now, if you look at the design of the Foundry, it's designed for solo content, period. And that's its vision. I think that vision needs to expand to allow for some good quality group content. And authors have created some amazing things. A buddy of mine named Apoc has created a five-man dungeon that is beautiful, works really well as a group content, but, you know, falls a little short in its ability to place bosses well, have something other than just simply stacked mobs in order to provide a larger challenge. It would be nice to be able to, you know, do things like drop fire pits, you know, at certain levels, or be able to say, okay, this boss at, you know, 20% health, you know, starts using this particular special or some other, you know, feature that he may not use until he gets to a certain point, so that those encounters become much more dynamic.
Yeah, as far as, like, you know, what you had brought up before, just about the scope or vision of the Foundry, when you think about it, I mean, I could see from my conversations with various individuals at Cryptic, Perfect World, I mean, I think that some of the stuff you bring up, especially about the terrain editing, and stuff like that, and even adding more capabilities for people to be more, to, if they so choose not to use, you know, the predefined areas and whatever else, you know, not just the areas, but whatever else, that you'd be able to do so. And I think that kind of fits their model. As far as modifying creature AI, that you might start getting into, that might be a little bit harder to do. You know, not that they wouldn't do it. It's just that, you know, I think that's maybe on the edge of their scope. I don't know about that.
Well, and that's my concern as well. You know, I mean, it could be the type of thing where they say, okay, we have, you know, Bosma type 4, and Boss type 4 has this set of specials potential, and you can then decide how those specials are utilized by the boss mob based on certain statistics, maybe. Or that maybe even that's predefined, you know, that we know that this boss mob at certain points will behave in this particular function. But very similar to the way, like right now, if you want to create, you know, something that's not a standard mob, basically you place the mob down that you want, and then you make a costume for it that's, you know, different than what it, you know, what it would normally be. And as long as you know what the specials are for that mob, and in fact, I've built an application out on my support site, Author's Anvil, that actually tells you what all of the encounter groups are, what their specials are, what their hit points are at certain levels, so that you can actually go out there and say, okay, I want a mob that does, you know, a push pull like the Thune Hulk, or I want a mob that does a trap like the Lizardmen Trappers. You know, I'll recostume it to be whatever I want that mob to look like. But that's the functionality that I want that mob to express in combat. So, you know, the same thing could be done, you know, but just simply by having certain predefined boss mobs that you could then costume appropriate.
Cool. So in summary, is there anything that, you know, you'd like to get out to the community, or things that you'd like for people to know about or hear about?
Well, I think that, you know, we are actually building, you know, a very strong community, and that community is in a constant state of flux, which is healthy. I think that that's, you know, that's good. I think that, you know, there are people out there that are, you know, working very hard to help newcomers coming in and, you know, provide them places to do. Scribes Enclave is another website that works very hard to provide reviews and actually provide interconnections between authors so that we can safely and easily, as authors, say, okay, I know that I'm not ready to release this to the public, but I would like five other authors to play this, you know, and tell me what they think, because, you know, I really need that extra feedback before I'm ready to push this out to the general public. And so it's good to have those support mechanisms in place, which we've had really ever since beta. You know, within the Silver Stars group, it was our Silver Stars group. You know, we all kind of played each other's content and helped each other. You know, now, you know, it's through features being supplied either via the forums with review trades, or going to Scribes Enclave and joining there. For more, you know, technical how-to information, there's the site I mentioned, Author's Anvil, that has tools and is focusing primarily on, you know, well, how do I make a mob do this, or how do I get, you know, how do I set up a timer in the game, or, you know, how do I do these things, you know, and technically, you know, what are the obstacles and how do I overcome those? And so there's some good support sites that are coming around, and there's a lot of people out there that have had the experience. And I think that, yeah, you'd mentioned, Brian, earlier, that there are a lot of people that, you know, yeah, they're authors, they go and they just go in to say something negative at the end of the quest. But I think that, you know, within the Neverwinter author community, that's a smaller group than you might expect. I think that the author community is very strong, and we're very supportive of one another. We kind of all, know that, we're all facing the same challenges to kind of get our work out there. And yes, it's about, some recognition, but it's also about what, interacting with people that are working together to achieve the same set of goals. So I think that that's important. And I actually think that in some ways, that's more important than anything else, and really the strength of the Foundry community right now.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you. I think that with everything that's going on, I think there's a lot of great things to be excited about in the community. I mean, if I'm talking to Psalm all the way down, to everybody, the other authors that we've spoken to already, and from what I've been able to read and everything on the Foundry and all the other stuff that's going on, even on the side, even other sub sites. And, there's a lot of great stuff going on in the community, and it's something to really be excited about and for you to be proud of for your work, because you've done great work.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And, all I can say is, while there are a lot of quests out there that have kind of become something of the gold standard, people say, wow, that's really terrific. In the last week, I've played, I want to say at least 10 or 15 quests that are as good or better than anything that I've seen to date. So, the only place to go is up. And that's the way I look at it. We're constantly evolving and getting better as we go.
Well, I want to take the time here just real quick to also thank you for coming on the show. And for you and the other Foundry authors who would like to come on the show, if you're listening to this, definitely like to have you on and talk about the works that you have going on. And I want to thank you again, Solantra, for coming on the show. It's a very great interview, and you really got into a lot of stuff that I think is going to be very beneficial for people who may or may not be as familiar with the Foundry as you are and are looking to get into the Foundry.
Well, I was happy to be here, and you guys are great. And I think that what you're doing only helps build even a stronger community. So I'm behind you guys 100%, and happy to direct people your way and have.
Because we've obviously been historically the Neverwinter Nights community past before Neverwinter came out, and we want to make sure that we're providing the same type of capacity that we did features that we gave out to the community with what we do to the Neverwinter community, so that we can really help any way we can to get out all the great work you're doing. We don't want to we want to make sure that people are hearing about it, and most amount of people that can find out about Neverwinter and its Foundry, and then the great authors such as yourself, the better. I mean, I think that's really what it comes down to. So it's really appreciated that, it's getting out there.
Excellent.
Thanks for coming on. And, just want to say thanks again, and feel free to throw me a line if you want to come back on the show for an update, or, when you have other stuff coming out you'd like to get on, or even a group or something like a round table we're planning actually in the future. So if you can come on and do that with some other Foundry authors, I think that'd be great.
Sure. I'd love to do that. One of the things that I've been giving some serious thought to, although I'm still not sure about it, somewhere down the road I was thinking about actually creating a podcast that would be like a Foundry workshop and would provide access for people to be able to, ask questions, how do I do this or how do I do that, and have a set of authors, in the wings that can answer those questions. So I think that's, that can only provide a good positive thing for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly, historically, we certainly have had podcast episodes where we get into that stuff, more the technical stuff, or even have ones that are like maybe some kind of just how-tos or just some basics type of stuff like that, roundtables for developers. It may not be necessarily general consumption, but we do them as bonus episodes. So, we can even help facilitate that if you need help, facilitating a podcast revolving around something like you just talked about.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah, might as well while we're at it.
Let's keep in touch for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thanks again. And as we always say, until next time, get in game and level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of the Realms of Trinity, who are solely responsible for its contents.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.